Blog Talk Radio.
Bull Rescue Foundation, or a Bully Breed Foundation.
Hey, Matt, I am here.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're able to make it.
Well, I got half a roll of, paper towel stuck to my forehead to catch the blood, but, brother, I'm good with it. Oh, my God, I don't know what the hell's going on. All of a sudden, everything was going fine until I logged on. Then, you got the little touchpad thing on your laptop.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, mine went, I don't want to participate. I'm good with it.
It's always something with us, isn't it?
It's like, what the hell? All of a sudden, everything went to hell in a handbasket at once. So I plug in the mouse, and apparently I have a retarded mouse because it takes a day and a half to move from side to side on the screen, and I'll get there. You just kind of have to deal with it. I'll be there when I get there. It's like, what the hell? There's not a trail of cheese, dude. You don't have to take your time. I realize you're a mouse. But please don't take your sweet-ass time moving from side to side on the screen. But, yeah, we definitely have an awesome show, brother. But here I am. Oh, by the way, again, I got to throw the fuck you, Keurig. You're no friend of mine. I probably won't sleep for the next 2 days. You should not be so easy to have coffee and caffeine. I really shouldn't have this much caffeine. But
you've been kind of jacked for the past couple of days.
But
or the past couple
God,
shows,
it's so
I should
tasty.
Say.
It's so tasty. I figured out, you have crackheads, you have heroin addicts, you have marijuana addicts, and then you have me, a caffeine addict. I love coffee.
Hey,
I didn't realize you could go through so many of those little dumbass
hiccups
in such a short...
Dennis, I got to step away for a second. Hold on.
Okay. What? Where'd he go? Who? Matt. Oh, shit, I can't go there. I got to go here. But, God, it's absolutely killing me that somebody made coffee so easy to have. Just absolutely killing me. But, yes, Keurig, thank you. I love you. I love my Keurig, but you're probably going to kill me in the long run. Anyway, Matt, where'd you go, brother? Are you back with us? Evidently not. But anyway, I will tell you this. Folks, you are in for a treat tonight. You have a founder and starter of a Pit Bull Rescue Foundation. You have a founder of a wolf sanctuary, which is pretty much a rescue foundation. I actually got to meet a couple of wolves tonight. And, wow, I got to tell you, everybody thinks, oh my God, they're wolves. They're going to just, go for my jugular and...
All right, I'm back.
Oh, well, welcome back.
Because minor confusion, Shelley, one of our guests, and Michelle are going to be the two women that are calling in. They called my cell phone instead of calling the show number, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was wondering. But what I was saying, folks, was we have the founder and organizers of a wolf rescue or a wolf sanctuary joining us tonight. We have a pit bull rescue organization founder joining us tonight. Well, now see, and Matt, you've met my dogs, right?
Yeah.
Okay. When you think of my dogs, do you think pit bull, or do you think just sweet damn dogs?
They are. Your dogs are hysterical. Every one of them. The only injury that you will get is if you are allergic to saliva on
saliva.
Their tongues from licking. Yeah, from kissing you so much.
Yeah.
So if you get a rash, I mean, that's the worst thing that's going to happen to you.
Yeah, and the funny thing is I have a magnet on the side of my refrigerator that says, caution, pit bull may lick you to death. And for Matt and I to both immediately go to, they'll lick you to death. And, yeah, I mean, that's what my dogs are all about. Now, I will have to say, Matt, can you see the board?
Yes, I can.
All right, do you see the 970? Is that Shelly?
Yeah, give me... Well, it's going to be Shelly and Shell. Let me decipher.
Okay, well, I'm going to bring them both in.
685 is Shelly, and then 691 is Michelle.
All right. Well, I'm going to bring them both in live right now. They'll both hear unmuted, and we'll bring them both in right now. Good evening, ladies. How are you?
All right.
Doing
how
well.
Are you guys doing?
Another great night. Dennis and I have been talking about this since we had started talking about it, of how excited we were for this show. Just in general, I have a local kind of little, and Shelly was talking about a little bit, a local place that has wolves that were injured that they take care of, and they have a nice size thing, and it's a free thing run by the park district that you can go and observe them and everything. And I spend hours there. I kind of have an obsession with wolves. But
there's a place south of Chicago?
Yes.
Got it.
So as for what you do,
how did you guys find it? How did you guys find out about Wolf Sanctuary?
Wolf Sanctuary was actually referred to me by a friend that worked at Wolf Park, they had referred. They're like, oh, if you, I've done a lot of work with them. They said, oh, you got to check these guys out too. So when I started watching everything on Facebook and all the photos and everything and all the activist things that you guys see, I just was extremely, extremely impressed.
Yep.
So definitely wanted to talk to you and help get the word out with other people who listen to our show all the time that may not know about it, and get a little more exposure and supporters and all that. So I definitely,
great.
Definitely thank you.
Well, thank you for having us on tonight.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Michelle's been affiliated with Wolf Sanctuary for 9 years, right? Michelle?
Almost 9 years.
Yeah. So she's gotten to see a lot of changes that have happened, and it might be good to have Michelle talk about why we are around, because it's a little bit different. People think that we deal with wild wolves, but we're actually dealing with helping with giving sanctuary to captive bred animals.
Oh, okay.
Well,
yeah.
I'm going to play the dumb co-host. Can I get the two of you to say your name so I know which voice is which?
So I'm Shelly.
And
okay.
I'm Michelle.
Okay. And because you're on radio, keep in mind that not everybody will know who is talking, but that was the, well, okay, that's all just me. But I had to figure out who was who.
Got it.
I will say this, and before you all get the chance to, like, Michelle, I know that I just listened to Shelley say that you've been associated with a wolf sanctuary for 9 years. I just got to, tonight, meet my first actual wolf that is a pet.
Uh-huh.
Now, I met a wolf hybrid about 10 years ago. And I really thought he was awesome. But tonight I actually met my first full breed, like, wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh my God, they're so cool.
They are impressive and absolutely beautiful animals. They truly are. And that's what makes them popular, unfortunately. Because a lot of people look at that like you did and see, wow, they're amazing, they're great, they're wonderful. And they don't do the research into what needs to be done to take care of them, and we end up with a huge surplus population that have no homes and no place to go. There have been, and I have met them myself, plenty of people who have kept them successfully as pets, but when you talk to them and you actually get right down into what they do on a daily basis for their animals, they have completely dedicated their lives to those animals. They have changed everything about the way they live, everything about how they work and where they go and what they do to accommodate the animals, and they'll... Most of the people that I've talked to who have had really awesome wolves or wolf dogs as pets, you know, when you get into a conversation with them, they look at you and they say, they were the best dog I have ever owned and I will never have one again, is usually the attitude that they take, because they are so much work to make work, but they're just absolutely phenomenal animals at heart.
Wow, and they're so beautiful.
They really are.
They are. Yeah, they're beautiful, but they don't make good pets, and it's very rare that there are people who actually know how to work with caring for them and dedicate their lives to them like they should. And that's the reason why Wolf exists, is because we try to provide sanctuary to captive bred wolves and wolf dogs that people raised for the pet industry, but it's a really sad statistic. Somewhere it's estimated between 150,000 to 250,000 wolves and wolf dogs are born each year for the pet industry. And by that time they've reached the age of two, about 80 to 90% are euthanized because people can't care for them. So we definitely want to educate people that this is not a good choice.
Now, I mean, as far as a... loving, sweet animal. Yes, they are, and they're very loyal. But Shelley, you started the foundation, right?
No, it was it started in 1995, or actually 1994, by Pat and Frank Lanteri, or Wendland, in La Porte, Colorado. And it started with a neighbor who had a pet wolf dog puppy that they couldn't handle. And so they basically said, you know, if we can't find a new home for this animal, we're going to euthanize it because we can't take care of it. So Pat and Frank took this dog in, a wolf dog in, and that's how the whole thing started. And then the word got out that they took in wolf dogs, and they ended up getting quite a few of them, so they had to find a place to move to that was a remote location, and then that's where the sanctuary is today. And I took over the sanctuary as the executive director last year on July 1st during the Hyde Park fire.
So it started just because somebody couldn't handle? Wow.
They couldn't handle a 3.5-month-old puppy. That's how the sanctuary got started.
I'm sorry, but that in itself just leaves me speechless. I mean, from the time that I was a small child, we had rough to handle dogs. What is the difference between raising a dog of any breed? Growing up, we had Dobermans, we had Shepherds, we had, well, when I was 25, I guess, we got our first pit bull. What is the difference in raising a wolf pup versus any other dog? Is there really a difference?
There is a fairly significant behavioral difference between dogs and wolves. And it's not something that's insurmountable by any means, but people have a mindset that wolves are going to be dogs. And I always tell people, if you want to get in the mind of a wolf, you have to think of them like they're a large, slightly more friendly version of your cat. They are very, very cat-like in their behaviors, in their willingness to please, in their kind of curiosity. Wolves are very, very curious about their environment, and they get into everything, and they're kind of the opinion that anything you bring with you into their enclosure or into their environment, you brought for them. Thank you very much. They always wanted an iPhone. Not that they have any idea what it does or what to do with it, but, you know, it's theirs now. And so that is, and this is something that I've kind of developed over the years that I've been working with them on interacting with them versus the dogs that I interact with at home. And they are very, in many respects, cat-like. Even the very social ones and friendly ones that you sit there and will roll over for belly rubs or come up and kiss your face, when it comes right down to it, it's kind of like you have a cat that looks like a dog.
Well, and that's actually a very, very good comparison as far as personality goes. So when I talk about wolves, and I tell people, wolves are not dogs. They're original canines. It's a totally different mentality on the approach of, for example, I had a friend who had a Husky Malamute mix that she just had a terrible time breaking of certain habits and training and all that. And when we went to Wolf Park, and she was looking, they had a couple of puppies, and then they had, you know, there was the hierarchy that you had to very, very cautiously approach them, and they chose when they were going to come up to you.
Mm-hmm.
It was
basically
all on their time, which is just the same as what like a cat is. It's all on their time. If they want nothing to do with you, you better not push the issue, because they'll let you know they're not happy.
Oh, it's absolutely true. And when you think about wolves compared to dogs, dogs are essentially wolf puppies. They've got this perpetual state of kind of openness. Wolf puppies, up until about the age of 6 to 9 months, are very open to new things in their environment. They have to be. They're learning about their world. So they've got this really intense interest in their environment and their life, and they're very excited and they're very open, and everything is new and fun for them. And then as they get older, they kind of get set in their ways, and that shuts down. And they, in many respects, wolves dislike change. And the more you change up their environment, the more nervous they can become, because they're not sure, is this a safe change? Is this an unsafe change? So we have dogs, which are perpetual puppies, always, you know, and of course there's a spectrum in there. You're going to have some dogs that don't like change. Some dogs, you know, you can't say that all dogs are behave this way. But as a generalization, dogs are very open to change. They're open to new things. They're very submissive. Puppies are very submissive to the adults in the pack. They get reprimanded, and they listen and they follow direction. Dogs generally listen and follow direction. Adult wolves, though, have to think for themselves. They have to be able to survive on their own. They are a predator, which means they have to be able to find their food, they have to be able to defend their territory, and they have to be able to protect themselves from competitor species that may be trying to sneak in on a kill or come after their young. So they have to be able to think, and they have to be able to problem solve. Now, there's a fascinating study, I wish I remembered the name of it, where they took wolf pups and dog pups and they raised them the same, exactly the same environments, exactly the same people, exactly the same protocol for how they were raised. And when they were a couple months old, they brought them into a room with a stranger that they hadn't met before, and they had that stranger point to items, different items. And what they noticed is that the wolf puppies completely ignored the person pointing. They were off on their own exploring. But the dog puppies seemed to have some sort of innate behavior that made them orient on the people. And even though they hadn't been trained for it and they'd been raised exactly the same way as wolves, the puppies would follow the finger. They would look to where the finger was pointing without any training or anything, just to kind of instinctively see what was interesting over there. So that kind of gives you, again, a difference between the dogs and the wolves. Wolves have to think for themselves. Dogs, we would prefer they not think for themselves. We want a dog who looks to us for direction, to know when to sit, stay, lay down, defend the territory. We want an animal that looks to us, whereas a wolf, they have to think entirely for themselves to keep themselves safe. They don't have that same kind of, I guess, freedom to relax that a dog does.
Yeah, I mean, if you compare, and just through breeding and everything else of what your typical house dog is, this is going to be an extreme comparison. If you put a gray or a timber or whatever, red wolf in a forest, and you put a Yorkie in the forest, the Yorkie's not going to last long.
No.
Not really.
Over centuries, it's a lot of that just instinct has been bred out of so many other breeds that it just hasn't happened with the wolf unless it's a generation.
Bred out or even modified.
Yeah.
There's a lot of behaviors that have been modified, like herding dogs. They kept that chase behavior, but the whole bite-kill reflex of that instinct, they've muted. So these animals are great. They love to chase, but that whole, like, fight it and kill it, it just doesn't occur to them. Their whole existence revolves around chase it in the direction I want it to go, and that's as far as that instinct takes them.
You know, another thing about what people do about raising captive-bred wolves and wolf dogs, that what we've done is we put them in an environment where they don't sit. And when they breed the wolf dogs and wolves, what they do is they typically will take the puppies away from their mothers when they're 5 or 6 days old, with the idea that when they open up their eyes, they're going to imprint on people. And so what they've done is they've taken them away from their own family, and so they don't learn the right social behavior they should from their own pack. And so we take them and we throw them and confuse them into this world of they're not a wolf, they're not a dog, they've not been taught how to socialize with their own species. And so we really do so much harm to them by not allowing them to be themselves.
Well, with that said, the one I was looking through the photos and stuff on the page today, and yesterday actually, and I came across the one of Tundra that you guys just got from Wisconsin. Well, first question I have about Tundra. Tundra doesn't look it's not 100% purebred, correct?
No, she's not.
She looks like she has collie.
She could have collie. She could have shepherd. We're not sure exactly what she's mixed with. But they mix all sorts of dogs. You know, typically when they're breeding, they want to preserve the wolf body form. So they're going to pick dogs that look like wolves, huskies, malamutes. But we have a number of different animals, and we've heard about and encountered a number of different animals that have been breeds that you wouldn't even think to breed with. When I was a child, I accidentally ended up with a golden retriever wolf mix. And he looked like a golden retriever, you know, a really leggy, his body structure looked like a wolf, but he had floppy ears and long golden fur. And, you know, so it was really, really bizarre to look at. We've had Sigmund, her companion, is another one that we believe is a collie mix, a long coat collie. And he's got, you know, his fur is 6-7 inches long and just this gorgeous red color. So you get a lot of varying images, I guess, when you start looking at wolf dogs. And the reason for that is genetics work in all sorts of funky ways, and you can't predict what kind of an animal you're going to get when you start breeding wolves and dogs together unless you have 100% wolf breeding with 100% dog. Then you know that all the puppies will be a 50-50 split. After that, it's anything, and although highly, highly, highly improbable, probably to the point of impossibility, you could, in theory, have a pure dog and a pure wolf be siblings in the same litter when you breed two wolf dogs together. So the look, the physical appearance of an individual is not always a guarantee that there is not wolf in that animal.
Yeah, Sigmund's a gorgeous dog.
Beautiful.
Yes, he is. I call him Fabio because of his hair. he could be on a romance novel book cover. the way we rate our animals is we don't get percentages on them. We rate them low content, meaning they have a low on characteristics of physical and behavior. They have a low amount of wolf content to mid content to high content.
Oh, okay. Oh, wait, Shelley, was Sigmund the one that you were talking about? Is he the one that poses? Like,
yes.
He knows you're taking a picture of him, and he'll pose. And,
I swear, you know, you get the camera out, and he just poses, and the hair will just flow through his fur, and it just looks like he's posing for a romance cover on a novel. He's so cute. And Tundra is the one that that was the companion we got for him, is Tundra. And he's fallen completely head over heels about her, and he doesn't want anybody to mess with her. So he's become very possessive of Tundra.
in the sanctuary, how many current animals do you have?
We have 29 right now, and what we do is we typically, our enclosures are in a very, like, what you would call a natural setting, and they range in size from anywhere as little as a quarter of an acre up to an acre in size, and we typically only have two animals per enclosure, being one male and one female. We do have one enclosure where there's a sister and two brothers, and it's a very isolated area, steeply sloped, rocky, with trees. And so they really love that environment.
That's what I was going to ask.
We
don't.
Yeah, we don't. We need to move. we've suffered from a fire and 6 floods in the past 16 months.
Devastating fire.
And, yeah.
That's what I was going to ask you, is if the floods and the floods that went through there had any direct effect on the animals or on the environment itself?
The animals, no. They took it all in stride, and they probably couldn't have cared less. The people, though, we weren't able to get into the sanctuary for 6 days. Luckily, we always have a staff person staying at the sanctuary 24/7. We never leave it unstaffed, so there was somebody there to take care of the animals during the flooding. But we couldn't get in for 6 days. The flooding was so bad. And by the time we got back, our road was almost completely washed out in spots, and it was really only accessible by ATV. So it took a lot of time and effort to repair the road, to be able to have regular access back to the sanctuary and stuff. So on the human end, it was very, very challenging and difficult. But the animals, they were just like, it's a little wetter than usual. And they were pretty much content to do whatever they wanted.
Well,
yeah. Go ahead, Dennis.
Like I said, I don't know a whole lot about wolves. I do know that Matt has studied them and et cetera. The lady that I met tonight, which I'm hoping she will call in, actually is the human of two of them.
Oh, nice.
you don't own wolves, they own you. She is the human that these two wolves own. My question is, well, she pointed out that one of them, like the male, has the dew claws on all four paws. And then she says that that is a common wolf thing.
It can be. It's not necessarily a common wolf dog thing. There's only one individual at the sanctuary that we have that we know of, unless some of the others were surgically removed, who actually has his rear dew claws still present.
Okay, so they typically remove them, or I'm kind of confused. I mean,
wolves typically do have their rear dew claws. Wolf dogs, it's kind of hit or miss because of the dog breed that they're in and the crapshoot with the genetics. Some people do have the rear dew claws removed. You know, the reasons I don't really understand vary. Some people might think it's unattractive to have the rear dew claws. Some people might be afraid that they're going to get hung up and caught on things. They aren't like the front dew claws. They're kind of floppy. they just kind of hang there and flop around. So there could be any number of reasons why people would have the rear dew claws removed. And a lot of the animals we get at the sanctuary, we don't have a lot of history on. We don't have a background on them. So if they did have them and they don't now, you know, we wouldn't know that for sure. But most of the animals that are at the sanctuary don't have the rear dew claws.
Yeah, because I know with a lot of hunting breeds, they remove them so they don't get caught in brush if they're out, you know, running through cattails or high grass or anything like that. A lot of the retriever breeds and stuff like that, it is kind of a useless trait, especially in the rear. There's really no dexterity to it. You're right. It kind of flops around.
I'm going to interrupt. I have a caller on the line. Actually, the board just blew up, but I have a caller on the line that I know is a very dear friend of mine that owns a wolf hybrid, and I would love to have her come in. And Michelle, Shelley, I promise you, she will do nothing more than back up everything that you've had to say. I've known her for 15 years, and she has had Dakota for about 10 years. Tina, are you with us? Okay, maybe not. Tina?
This is Becky. I met Dennis tonight.
Okay, yes.
I do have two wolf hybrids.
Yes. Now,
you got the
Michelle, Michelle, well, no, actually, it's kind of weird. I won't give up the phone numbers, but there is one digit difference. And that is so peculiar. I won't give up the first three, but Becky, yours is one number off where you have 90, hers is 91, and the last two are identical. And it's like, what the hell? Matt, when I told you earlier that I met a lady tonight who owns two wolves, and if you look at my Facebook, this is the lady who I took the picture of that wolf tonight. They're absolutely gorgeous. So, Shelley, Michelle, will you do me a favor and please welcome Becky onto the show? And if you have seen my pictures or the picture tonight, because I never realized they're so damn camera shy.
They can be. They definitely can be.
Did you say
she is, I mean, well, they're both, I mean, everybody's afraid of them, but they both run from people. I mean, they don't aggressively go up to anybody.
Well, that's a common misconception people have about wolf dogs. We've got this whole Little Red Riding Hood, big bad wolf mentality about them. And really, in reality, the animals that I've worked with are either social with people, like they're willing to interact with you, or they prefer to have nothing to do with you. It's very, very rare to find an individual who is openly or actively aggressive, and usually that's a result of extreme abuse in their history. Wolves are, in my experience, very, very timid animals who are going to cautiously approach a new situation or a new person rather than just kind of jump in with all four paws, if you will.
Yeah. No, these, as he can tell you, they don't come up to you. Actually, one of them stayed outside the whole time he was here.
So, and, you know, we were talking a little bit about private owners and all that, having wolves in their pets and everything. How did you acquire your dog?
We bought him from a man that breeds them in down near the North Carolina-South Carolina line.
And what's the percentage of actual, or what was told on the paper?
She is 95, and I think he's 98.
That's pretty high percentage.
Yeah.
And how long have you had him for?
She is 5, and he's 3, and we've had him since they were at least 8 weeks.
Oh, okay. And what we were talking about earlier also is with people who take on the a breed like a wolf that's, you know, a very high percentage. Obviously you probably had dogs in the past, like either growing up or just owned previous dogs. Was there any difference in the care of them versus anything you've had in the past?
No. She this is actually the second set we've had. And, I mean, we have vets here in Virginia that will, and some of them do not recognize the rabies and the wolf, and there are some here in Virginia that do. So, yeah, I mean,
that's a big hotly debated topic is whether rabies vaccines work in wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And which I know is kind you of peculiar because there's consideration that dogs are a subspecies of wolves. So it's kind of strange that they don't think that the rabies vaccine is going to work for them.
Well, yeah, I know. But, no, I have one. And actually he has two himself. So, yes, he is more than willing to see him and treat him. And I heard you all talking about the dew claws. The male has a dew claw on each foot.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, unusual too, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, if I remember correctly, it's more common on wolves, but it's not a totally 100% present trait on all wolves.
Well, yeah, we were told that was a wolf trait. The dew claws on each.
Mm-hmm.
No, I've not seen it very often myself. And I have seen it on dogs, too. So, I don't know.
Well, one thing that I noticed about Becky's, I only got to meet the female. And, Becky, what was the female's name again?
Cimarron.
Okay. And, by the way, she's huge and gorgeous. But I noticed she really was. And I can't imagine her ever attacking anybody because she was so standoffish with, like, new people. But I noticed that she had kind of a flat back. Is that a wolf trait? And I actually questioned Becky about it because it
you
just,
mean it's straight spine? Is that what you mean?
No, I mean, like, I don't know. It seemed like she was squared off, like she had a flat back and then it squared off on the hips versus being rounded. Like, you know, I've got three pits. And they're
rounded. Yeah, you're talking about kind of
quarters.
The shape of the chest, right? Like that barrel-chested versus something else?
No, I mean her, like, her back itself
mm-hmm.
was kind of flat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're talking about more like her rib cage was like, her ribs came straight off and then down at like a 90-degree angle, like a flat surface, like
mm-hmm.
a table.
Instead of rounded.
Kind
of,
that's
yeah.
kind of like Odin.
That is, well, no, Odin's a block. He's one of our very weight-challenged animals. Wolves, like a lot of dogs, have a very barrel chest. And what I mean by that is that their ribs are a lot rounder. Wolves typically have a very deep and narrow chest, which means they kind of just come straight down. They don't kind of round out like a dog does. Now, they should still have a little bit of that curve in where the rib cage ends up until you get to the hip, so they're kind of like that little, not hourglass figure, but similar to that, and it does taper up underneath the belly to the hips. Like you'd see in a normal dog, but the ribs are not nearly as rounded. Wolves are typically described as having deep, narrow chests. So even though they're huge, the between the front legs is usually only a couple inches, 2 to 4 inches between the front legs, where on a dog, especially if you're talking about like a pit, they can have a significant spread between their front legs. Where the ribs are, and that's kind of a more rounded rib appearance than you see in wolves, which are pretty much just kind of straight down.
I mean, well, what I was getting at was actually her back,
mm-hmm.
like above
back
the
tail. Back towards her
tail. Yeah, I mean, her back itself was
mm-hmm.
very flat. Is that...
Hmm.
So there wasn't any curving in the spine, is what you're saying. It went straight from the shoulders straight to the hips, and there wasn't any curving or anything?
No, I mean, it was just flat. I mean, she was gorgeous build, but
mm-hmm.
the back seemed very flat, and then it just seemed like it squared off at the back hips.
Okay. Well, yeah, I could... Thinking of back to the animals that we've had that have been pure wolves, that was kind of, if what I'm imagining is what you're describing, that does seem to be a fairly wolfy trait. They do tend to have more flat backs. They're not very broad, but they don't.
She's got broad shoulders.
If I'm seeing what you're describing.
She's got broad shoulders on her, but, yeah, she tapers back. And then I was telling him that when she gets upset about something, that whole stripe will stand up.
Yes, their hackles, we've had animals from the tip of the tail all the way up to their forehead have hackles stand straight up.
Yeah, she that's how you know when she's upset.
So, well, let me ask you this, and I'm going back to, now, Shelley, did you start the organization?
No, it was started in 1994 by a married couple, Pat and Frank Winland, and I became the executive director July 1st last year.
Okay. What is the ultimate, what is the ultimate goal of the Wolf Sanctuary? To house or
well, we're what you would call it. We are a true sanctuary in that when we take these animals in, what we look for is ones that cannot be in a home setting, and they need to be able to be have a safe place to live out their lives where they're cared for and they can have the ability to feel safe. And so when we take an animal in, it's for life, and we care for them, and we make sure that they are sterilized, spayed and neutered, and so we care for them for the rest of their life. And by the county, we're limited to 30 animals, and so when we lose a companion animal for a pair, we'll start to try to look for a compatible companion for them. And we, our WOLF actually stands for Wolves Offered Life and Friendship. And when we have three main thrusts in our mission. One is education, and we go out to schools and different organizations to talk about the importance of wolves in the environment. And we also talk about why we exist and why it's very difficult for captive bred wolves and wolf dogs to exist in society. And then we provide sanctuary, which I just described. And the other thing is we do rescue. We're part of a network across the U.S. for when we get hundreds of pleas from people who reach a point where they can no longer care for their animals and they're trying to find a place to place them. And, you know, we can't often take those animals in because we're limited to 30, and so we'll reach out to our network to see if we can't help to place their animal with other organizations.
Well, is it a county or government funded facility, or what's private?
We're all private. We depend upon donations. We're privately funded, so we depend on people who will provide donations to us, monetary donations. We get no government funding at all. So, our supporters are the ones that help us to continue forward with the mission of Wolf.
Okay. Well,
ultimately, ultimately our mission is to, through rescue, sanctuary, and education, and obviously this is a lofty goal that's probably going to take years if it ever comes true, but we would love to see that there is no wolf dog or wolf in captivity being put down because they don't have an appropriate place to live.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. What is your opinion of wolves or wolf hybrids owned by, let's say, people like Becky, she is an absolute sweetheart, and her two are absolute sweethearts. But what is your opinion of just Joe Schmo owning a wolf or wolf hybrid as a pet?
Honestly,
well,
people like Becky are few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
They're a
right.
rare breed. So in the larger world, personally, I do not feel that wolves and wolf dogs should be bred or sold as pets because there are not enough people like Becky who are willing to take the time and energy to care for the animal appropriately, which is why we're dealing with hundreds of calls a year from people saying they can't take the animals, which is why 90% of the 150,000 that are sold every year as pets will be killed before they turn 2 years old. That's an outrageous number of animals that are being born and killed every single year because, you know, your Joe Schmo wanted a wolf that, because their neighbor had one and they thought it looked cool, or I met a gentleman who was selling them at the dog park, and, you know, you pick one up for $500 at the dog park, or we have three animals at the sanctuary currently that we got from a facility in Alaska. It was a zoo, a roadside attraction in Alaska, and if you liked what you saw, you could take one of the exhibits home as a souvenir. There's a lot of people out there that don't give the time and energy that it takes, don't think it through, do an impulse buy, and that's a huge problem because those animals either end up killed or in very neglectful or abusive situations. And we have some absolutely shocking horror stories of some of the animals we've rescued that just make you wonder how someone could do that. and not just, you know, hate themselves for it.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff in the years since I was, you know, 8, 9, 10, when I really, like, basically they got into my heart, and it's been something that I mean, I have a ton of wolf tattoos. It's just been a passion of mine for a long time. But I see so many of them that are in places that are emaciated, and it just, you know, they get too much, and the owners just say, I really, you know, I just got to the point to where I just didn't care and I couldn't handle it anymore. And for people I've talked to in the past that say, hey, I would really love to have a wolf as a pet, I'm like, and I tell them flat out, buy a husky, buy a Malamute. And they're going to drive you crazy, and they're domesticated.
And they're going to eat everything that you didn't want them to eat.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, and then imagine that on a wolf who, like you said, with Becky's animals, are huge. They are massive animals, and they can be very stubborn, and then they live their lives on their own time. And if it's time for them to chew a hole through the wall, there's very little you can do to stop them.
The lady that we got our first one through, she would not sell to anybody in an apartment because she said one did eat through and got in the apartment next door.
Yep. We've had a couple of them. We had one come to us because he chewed through the crawl space of someone's home. So it takes a special kind of dedication to take one of these animals and care for them appropriately.
I will say this. After meeting Becky's animals tonight, Becky, I've got to give you huge kudos. Absolutely beautiful dog. Well, what do you call them? You say I have a dog or I have a wolf?
Do what?
Most people say they either have a wolf or a wolf dog is usually how they phrase it. They'll either say they have a wolf or a wolf dog. Some people will say they have a wolf hybrid.
Okay. I mean, I certainly don't want to, insult. I mean, they're absolutely awesome. I mean, yours were gorgeous. Oh, my God, is that the boy is just huge. Even though he's standoffish as all can be, the female, just absolutely gorgeous. And I actually posted her picture on my profile. But I am just awestruck by how beautiful they are.
Well, since you saw them, and like she said, they chewed through the fence in the backyard, and I've been outside getting them back through the hole and nailing up the hole. So, they have a mind of their own. There is no...
They're extremely intelligent.
If you have the time and dedication, they are so much fun in a ridiculously frustrating kind of way. It's kind of one of those things where you always walk in and you're like, what did you do now?
Uh-huh.
You're always looking for what's different, what's changed, what have they gotten into. And it keeps you on your toes. And, you know, in most cases, it's kind of one of those humorous moments of you're just so exacerbated. You're like, oh, I don't want to, really, you did that?
Yeah.
And, but the antics, you know, they can be a hoot. They really can. But you've got to have the patience and the tolerance to put up with the issues that they get into, you know, that, you know, one, make them so frustrating, and two, make them so adorable.
Yeah, I mean, it's an 8-foot fence and it's electrified, but that didn't stop them from finding a way through.
They're extremely intelligent, good problem solvers. And, you know, you think that you've managed to outwit them, and then they make a mockery of you later and laugh at you at the same time. So when we had to evacuate with the Hyde Park Fire and bring him down out of the canyon and temporary facilities while they were off the mountain for almost a month, it was amazing watching one of our girls who recently passed away, Renata, how she was trying to figure out how to get the gate open and how to get the gate off the hinges. And you just watch her mind work on trying to do this problem solving.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, at first she would nose at the latch, and she'd try to get the latch up so we'd be locking the latch down. And when that stopped working, she'd be pushing on the gate. And eventually it got to the point where she would get her mouth through the wires, and she would actually lift the gate up off the hinges. And if the latch hadn't have been down, I'm sure she would have pushed that gate off just so she could go start a fight with one of our other females who was nearby that she took exception to. So it's amazing.
Oh, yeah, and they've got a very strong jaw power to them, so they can pull and tug what they want.
Yeah,
for sure.
Excellent problem solvers. That is definitely for sure.
I'm going to interrupt. I have to be the bad guy. Thank you so much for calling in and letting us know what it's like to be wolf owners. I have another caller calling in now that wants to tell us she's actually had a wolf wolf hybrid or wolf dog. I'm not real sure what the hell I would call Dakota, other than smart as shit and sweet as can be. But Becky, thank you so much for calling in, sweetheart. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. You'll have a good evening.
And can I put in a plug for our sanctuary? Can I put a plug in for our sanctuary? Can I put in a plug for our sanctuary?
Sure.
If people want to learn more about us, go to www.wolfsanctuary.net. And you can find out about us, and we have pictures of all of our guys and a little profile about them, and we are looking for some supporters, and we'd love to have people be part of our wolf pack.
Well, Michelle and Shelley, please stay with us.
Absolutely.
I was talking to Becky, who called in that owns the two wolves. But Michelle and Shelley, if you'll stay with us,
absolutely.
I would definitely appreciate that. And Becky, thank you so much for calling in. She just left us. But now we have Tina now that also owns a wolf hybrid. And Opie, I promise you, just a couple of minutes, Opie, you will be on with us to talk about Ring Dog Rescue and the Bully Breed Rescue that you run. So,
great.
Tina, are you with us?
Yes, hey, Donna.
I'm here. Hello.
Hi, darling.
Hi, Tina.
Hello.
Connected. Tina, I have known for, 15, 18 years?
At least.
And she has had Dakota, that is an absolute sweetheart. And he is, what percentage would you say he is in the wolf breed?
Well, we were told he was 85% wolf. I tend to believe he may be more than that. He has so many of the wolf traits, the timidness, the family pack. You know, he's got to always be right up against you. A very loving dog. Whatever. We call him a dog, but he's our sweetheart. When we got him, he was actually the runt of the family. And he's probably, at 12 years old, he's about 80 pounds. where his brothers and sisters are probably about 180.
180?
That's really big. Your average wolf, unless it's like a northern wolf, your average wolf is going to be somewhere between 75 and 110 is going to be your average.
Oh, wow.
So they're I bet if they're a wolf dog, they've got some large breed dog in them. They're making them that big. Now,
well,
some northern breeds, some of the more arctic breeds
can get
that big. Mm-hmm.
Hey, ladies, please keep in mind that everybody is live on the phone at one time and coming across the board at one time. So you have to kind of falter to one another, whoever starts a sentence. If you jump in on them, all of a sudden you have four sentences at one time, and it just comes across as a mess. So make sure to give way to whoever starts the sentence. Well, Dina, what is the one thing, what is the most wolf-like thing that Dakota does that makes you absolutely no question that's a wolf?
Well, up until probably a few years ago, when we lost our shepherd, he used to howl. I mean, he literally would sit out in the backyard and howl at the moon. He did not know how to bark. He finally learned how to bark from Shelby, I believe, but he howls just like a dog, or a wolf, I mean. We've actually seen some of the wolf programs on TV, and he'll sit in front of the TV and talk with them.
They do like to do a group howl. That all of our guys at the sanctuary, when one of them starts howling, the rest of them join in. And barking is not a natural behavior for wolves. It is definitely a learned behavior, and you'll find, or at least we find at the sanctuary, that the more doggy the wolf dog is, the more likely they are to bark instead of howl. The higher content wolves, wolf dogs and the wolves, mostly pretty much howl pretty much exclusively instead of bark.
Yeah, that's what Dakota did up until, like I said, hanging out with an actual German Shepherd. I guess he was trying to talk to her all the time and had to learn her language.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the wolves will chatter. They'll talk in their own kind of language, but it's more yelpy, more body language than actual domestic dog barking kind of thing.
They also chuff, and they have a different way of chuffing about if they're nervous or something. They're trying to figure things out. They do a little what we call chuffing.
It's their version of a bark. It's kind of like a cough.
Okay. What's the what do you find the average lifespan of a hybrid is?
In captivity, it can vary, but our average at the sanctuary is somewhere between 11 and 15 years. Now, we have had a number of individuals live to be 17, 18, 19 years old. We currently have a 21-year-old. So some of them stick around for a pretty long time, but our average is usually 11 to 15 years.
Okay. All right, now I'm going to bring in our other guest, which is Opie. And Opie runs or founded Ring Dog Rescue. It's a bully breed rescue based out of Richmond, Virginia. And probably the largest bully breed rescue in Virginia. Opie, how similar are they in the characteristics between the wolf and the pits?
Did you say how similar are they?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I think that, we have to remember that wolves in general are wildlife. They're wild animals, so they're going to have some residual traits, the dogs will. But that in general, you know, you've got so much. I think we as humans have changed dogs drastically and dramatically over the years. So I think that while you'll still have some basic comparisons, they're not that much alike anymore. I mean, the strays that you see on the road that are starving to death, they have lost their sense of hunting, foraging, and being able to care for themselves even, the dogs. So I think that there is a big difference.
Yeah,
we agree.
That's moment of silence. I apologize about that.
Yeah.
But no, that's, you know, it's for people in general, and Opie, I don't know if you've spent any time with actual wolf breeds or observed them in, you know, a sanctuary like what they run or anything, but it's the only thing that you really find similar is just the physical appearance. I mean, the personalities and everything are just a totally different direction of what we encounter on a daily basis. As far as like going to a dog park, if you brought a wolf to a dog park, it you look at the other dogs and be like, oh, yeah.
Well, I think it's not even so much that, you know, that they both have fur and stand on four legs. I mean, I think domestic animals, we've changed their health. We've changed their temperament. We've changed their markings. We've, you know, humans have definitely changed, you know, canines through the years, like to, you know, some of them to degrees that are actually, I mean, look at the English bulldog. They're so unhealthy. There's many veterinarians that look at them and say, we just can't understand why people continue to breed these dogs. I mean, they're just the most unhealthy animal, yet the American public still wants them. So they're still bred. They have behavioral problems. They have serious, serious medical problems. And they live shortened lives. And a lot of times they live lives that are painful in a sense, with those stocky bodies and short legs, and we've bred them to have bigger and bigger and bigger chests, where, you know, wolves, you know, the actual ones in the wild, we luckily enough haven't been able to change, but so much we've been able to change their habitat by destroying a lot of it, but they still know how to care for themselves. And I think when you have a hybrid or, you know, even a captive bred wolf, there's still some of that residual, even though I'm sure that the ladies at the Wolf Sanctuary, you know, probably have a few of them down there that don't know how to care for themselves if need be, you know?
They're great problem solvers, so they would figure it out. Now, I always tell people there's a large degree in learning when it comes to hunting in the wild, so they all know the chase, bite, kill. You know, it runs from you, you chase it, you bite it, and then you kill it, and then you eat it. That is standard for all wolves. However, chase, bite, kill squirrel is different from chase, bite, kill moose. So there is a degree of learning that would be involved, which could reduce a wolf dog or a captive bred wolf's chances of survival in the wild. But because they are problem solvers, they wouldn't sit there and starve. They would find another source of food. So they'd go after, they'd get into the backyard, jump into backyards and go after domestic pets, or they would get into garbage. They would definitely be able to figure out a way to keep themselves fed.
And my argument would be that if we haven't changed domestic animals as much as we had, then we wouldn't have the starving animals on the street. So I think there's an actual huge, huge difference between the two.
I would agree.
Now, Opie, what is your opinion on, you know, the most feared and the most brutal
canine is the pit bull. What is your opinion on why they have that reputation?
Well, again, I would say that it has to do with the human component. And that is that a lot of people fear what they don't know, and also that a lot of people don't like when I say this, but we as humans tend to always have to find a reason why things happen, and they're not willing to look at, themselves as a responsible party. So you pick on certain subgroups or things in order to explain why something happened. So it's not the explanation that the dog was under-socialized, it lived on a chain, it was left intact in a yard, and something bad happened due to that circumstance. Instead, it's that it's a pit bull. That would be, that people jump to that reason as opposed to looking at themselves going, I wonder if I had socialized this dog, if I had neutered it, if it had lived inside, never been tethered, would it be acting this way? And I think that has a lot to do with why people, think those things. It's a very interesting thing that in the news it is always a dog until it is a pit bull type dog. And when it's a pit bull type dog, that changes the entire story. And unfortunately, over the years, we call them pit bull type dogs because they are so mixed up. If you do the DNA on these groups of dogs, while they don't actually type the American Pit Bull Terrier because it's not recognized by the American Kennel Club, but the Amstaff is, and the Staffordshire Bull Terrier and other groups of dogs that are often mislabeled. But if you do DNA on these pit bull type dogs, you come to find out that they're just mixed breed dogs. They just happen to carry certain characteristics, short hair, stocky body, sometimes a wide set head, the way ears sit, things like that. And if you started looking at dogs as individuals more so than at their particular breed or what color they are or what pattern they are and looked at the individual behavior, I think we would start changing some minds.
It always feels to me that mankind is always looking for a scapegoat, and we pick something to be that, and we just kind of always blame that. Wolves are, there's a huge conflict around wolves, and there's this idea that wolves are evil. Sharks are man-eaters, and pit bulls are these aggressive breeds. It seems like when something happens that we fixate on that, and then we make that particular individual our scapegoat, whether it's a deserved reputation or not. It just makes us feel better to blame somebody other than ourselves.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're 150% correct. I mean, it's really fun. We've talked about this at work a few times. One of the guys at work has two English bulldogs, and they don't have as smashed into a face, so they're a lot healthier than some of the other ones. He specifically, that's all he'll own is English bulldogs.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want the ones that have the short muzzle and all that, but that's above and beyond the point. But if you look back from the 1870s to the 1890s, when there was a huge push for wolf extinction in the United States and even the southern parts of Canada, it was they were killing chickens, they were, killing cows, they were just killing livestock in general. Well, that's kind of it was basically looked at as like, oh, well, that's the problem, not the human coming into their land at that moment. So the wolf was the bastard child of the product of people settling and moving into new territories. Well, and then you got into the 80s where there was a couple different breeds, like Rottweilers were Satan.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's the pit bull, where if a German Shepherd bites somebody, or if a Yorkshire Terrier bites somebody, they don't ever talk about that. But if a pit does it, it's on every news station on, it's like national news because it's a pit bull. Well,
you know, you're right.
You take a
more
breather.
Likely,
go ahead.
I was going to say, you're more likely to get bit by a small toy dog than you are by a pit. The small dogs are the ones that tend to be more bitey and more temperamental.
And people in general let the smaller breed dogs get along with a lot more, get away with a lot more than they would a Rottie, a Wolf Hybrid, a Pitbull, a King Corso, a Prospect Canario, any of those, because, you know, they look at a size differential and they say, oh, well, it couldn't hurt very much. Well, our philosophy is anything with teeth can bite, and you need to look at each animal individually and look at its temperament, its behavior, and work with those things, not on what it looks like and what color it is and how big it is and so on and so forth.
Well, it comes to the, oh, but she's so cute or he's so cute. That's what it boils down to. And, ladies, I have to give you both major, major kudos in the fact that you both brought up a very valid point. If my neighbor has a wolf hybrid or a pit bull, well, not mine because I got pits, but Joe Schmo, the general populace, if their neighbor has a wolf hybrid or a pit bull hybrid, it causes a sense of, oh, shit, for lack of better words. Both animals are the same. They can both be trained in who is the pack leader. And both animals are just as sweet and loving as any other animal. But because they are either a wolf hybrid or a pit mix or, you know, something like that, it always causes the neighbor's butt to pucker.
Yep.
I expect my kid is going to get his face chewed off by this. And both of you have brought up one very valid point. It's all in how they're raised and how they're loved.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an equally valid point to bring up that you know, these wolf dogs, these pit bulls, these breeds, you know, while there's nothing inherently evil about the animal, they are just as capable of causing damage as any other animal. Your domestic cat is capable of causing damage. Your horse is capable of causing damage. Just because they are a pit and wolf doesn't mean that they are more dangerous or less dangerous than any other animal. It's all, like you said, in how they're raised, how the people deal with the situation, socialize the animal, react to stimulus that they know might increase the excitement level of the particular animal. But I do think it's important to note that they are, simply because of the way they're built, they are capable of causing injury, and not even necessarily intentional. It could be accidental as just a part of play, and to become so obsessively fearful of that potential is very irrational when it exists in every single animal that anybody can interact with on a daily basis.
Yes. And I would also like to point out, going back to the small breed versus, you know, pit bull type dog, wolf breed, you know, most of these little dogs that can do quite a bit of damage if need be, but it's you know, looked at a lot differently, has to also do with the fact that, you know, the majority of people that are bitten, at least in the United States, are children. And the children that are bitten are at eye level with you know, your pit bull type dog, your German Shepherd, your Rottweiler. And so, you know, majority of the time, the animal is actually giving a warning and saying, back up, you know. And people are not watching what that warning is. They're not paying attention to what's going on with their animal and assuming, oh, my dog likes everything. Well, I'll tell you, as an adult,
that there are some children that scare me, so I don't expect, you know, my dog to be totally okay with, like, a toddler running up in their face and doing all kinds of other things. But it's important for us as responsible guardians of these animals to watch the warning signs and not set our animals up to fail by putting them in these uncomfortable situations. And if you own an animal and you have a toddler or you have a child, then you need to not leave them unattended, because they have bad days just like we do. And, you know, just because they give a warning and sometimes just because they bite doesn't make them a terrible dog. It means they were in an uncomfortable situation and they unfortunately chose the wrong response.
Exactly.
You know, and, that, and one thing you brought up, wolves are very good about also giving you warning. They will never attack without letting you, they do not attack just unprovoked. And they do let you know by giving you signals, I'm uncomfortable, I'm uncomfortable, I'm uncomfortable, please leave me alone. And you just have to pay attention to that.
Yeah, they'll let you know what their intention is, if you know what to look
yeah.
for.
And that, well, that's the unfortunate thing, I think, is that not enough people take notice of what their dog or, you know, is trying to tell them. And say that I'm uncomfortable, you know. Oh, isn't it cute when it backs up? So, oh, isn't that cute? No, it's not cute. It's backing up because it's terrified, and we need to remove it from the situation that it's in and make it comfortable as well, you know, and not just throw, you know, I see a dog at, you know, at a, whether it's an adoption stand, a shelter, or a breeder, or whatever have you, and just say, oh, that's the dog I want and bring it home. You need to take precautions, just like before you have a baby, you build a crib and you make a room and you get the things that you need. You have to be prepared to have a companion animal and to do right by it as well as the human component of your family.
All right. Now, Shelley, I'm going to ask you a question that as a pit bull owner, I know what to expect from my pits. So, Opie, I'm going to kind of isolate you from this one.
Okay.
But, Shelley, I have to ask, if I were to bring a pit, or if I were to bring a wolf hybrid or a wolf breed home, can I expect that wolf breed to be a lap dog? Are they that kind of animal?
They're not, you know, again, it all depends on how much wolf that you have in them. But generally, they're not going to be like what you are accustomed to with dogs in that, you know, they're not going to want to make sure that they please you. You're there to please them. And they'll come and they'll spend time with you until they're satisfied for themselves, and then they'll go away. So they tend not to be these cuddler, snuggly types. They'll do it for a little while, and then they're done. And that's what we typically see with our guys when we go in to socialize with them. They'll come over and, you know, this is what we tell people who come to visit us. They'll spend as much time as they want with us, and then once they're done with us, they'll go off. So that's the difference with them. Just like what Michelle said, they're kind of like cats in canine bodies, and that they'll spend what time they want with you versus the other way around where we're accustomed with dogs who are there to try to please us.
Okay.
Now, that's not to say they won't try to crawl in your lap. We have a number of animals who will try to crawl in your lap or stand on top of you, but it's not the same, like, I'm going to cuddle and curl up, kind of like, ooh, look, I'm tall now. So that's kind of their attitude.
Well, there's certain things, too, with canine breeds, and it's across the board, is what we perceive as to be cute and cuddly and oh, look at how funny he's being. Well, it's also an exertion and dominance too, that there is a fine line of are you being owned, or is this just a cute behavior?
Well,
and that's all
that happens with any behavior.
Yeah. But I'm talking, we could think
something's cute when it's fearful.
Yeah. Well,
too.
I'm saying go ahead.
I was going to say, and I think the unfortunate thing behind that is the majority of people wait until the behavior has gotten to a very critical point before they reach out to a behaviorist or a trainer or even their veterinarian, or they just at that time decide just to give the animal up because, oh, it's just so uncontrollable, as opposed to working on it from the beginning or from the first time that you started noticing a behavior that was becomes unwanted, excessive barking, you know, certain other behaviors. You know, all of a sudden you give an animal all these privileges because it's so cute and it's cuddly and I want it to sleep in bed with me and I want it to get on the couch and I want to do all these things, and then it becomes possessive of its couch, of its area, of its toys, of its humans, and then at the point that then you can't allow people to come over anymore because the dog is just so dominant is when they finally decide to either to do something about it or give the animal up. And that's unfortunate that they're not educating themselves from before they get the animal or from the beginning or asking for help, you know, when a behavior starts as opposed to when it's gotten to the point of no longer wanting the animal.
Oh, well, and a huge problem is also people look at puppies. And what's a cute behavior for a puppy is not always a cute behavior for an adult. But if you let a puppy get away with it, it's really difficult to change the adult's mindset about that particular behavior.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, with what people do as far as Opie was just talking about, and, you know, they get these dogs can't handle, that's pretty much how everything of how your foundation runs and your sanctuary runs is because of that direct reaction is I can't do it and get rid of it, or at the they try and change it so much to where everything's ingrained into that animal, then you guys get it because it's not like there's an open adoption, you know, at PetSmart for wolves.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also think that it's a huge misconception that rescue groups and sanctuaries are here to help the people out. We're not here, and I know this sounds a little off, but we're not here to help the human out, to relieve them of what they have caused. We're here to help the animal and hopefully help the animal on my end. With them being a sanctuary, it's a little different because they're not going to leave. But on my end, the hope is to rehabilitate the animal so that it can live in a healthy and happy environment and have a family that really will take it seriously and understand that, you know, animals, companion animals are work. Nobody buys a horse and just, or maybe they do, but you don't buy a horse or get a horse and assume that you don't have to have any expense or cost. And people, you know, they get dogs thinking, oh, it's cute and fuzzy and it's going to be great, not taking in the veterinary cost, not taking in hip dysplasia or, you know, we've had so many different issues across the board, torn ACLs, luxating patellas, heart, I mean, name it. And they're not even looking at your basic preventative care, let alone the cost of having training, getting a crate, doing right by it. It's just that it's cute and fuzzy. And people need to start as a whole looking at it in a much more responsible fashion.
And that's across the board. And it doesn't matter what level it's on. You know, what Shelley and Michelle do, or even on your level as just a local. I mean, the past few animals that all of my family have gotten have been through adoption, through PAWS, or through a couple different organizations that are here local in the Chicago area. And in my lifetime, the only pet or animal that I can say that we have had was one dog that was bought from a pet store, and that was because I was a little brat at, like, 6 years old and was losing my mind because I wouldn't leave without the dog. So my mom got it for me, and her name was Shadow, and she's still I have pictures of her still to this day on the wall, and she passed away when I'm 32 now, almost 33. She passed away when I was I think, right around 21. So, and for a pet store bought dog, she was a Brittany Spaniel Black Lab mix. And she ended up passing away when she was 19.
Mm-hmm.
So,
good life.
I don't know what it is with my family, but my like especially my mom, she's always had a green thumb with dogs. Is they weigh? We had a 72-pound collie golden retriever mix. So he had very very long hair. He looked like a collie, but it was his whole body was gold and white, very long flowing hair, and he passed away at 72 pounds. I think when he went, he was like 19 or 20. And for a domestic dog of that weight, that's very, very old.
Yes, that is. That's pretty much very old for any large dog, no matter what their weight.
Yeah, and I do have to say, I think that there's a difference. I mean, I'm 40 years old. You're 32 years old. I think that, you know, when I grew up right outside the District of Columbia, and even when I was in school as a child, we were still teaching in the schools about wildlife, about livestock, about domestic animals. You still had 4-H clubs, even in the inner cities, did things like that. And we've lost a lot of that. And I think a lot of the younger generations have grown up not having any real reality to animal welfare in general. How do I care for a dog? What's the difference between them? What's livestock versus wildlife? And, you know, for me, it's like I applaud the wolf sanctuary in so many ways because, you know, again, humans took a wild animal that deserved to live its life in its habitat and began breeding them for, you know, for their personal, because they liked the way it looked or they thought it was cool or whatever reasoning, and now you have to have sanctuaries and rescues for them, you know? And it's to me, it's a really sad state that we have to have rescues and sanctuaries when we're, you know, when we're so evolved in so many other ways that people still don't see animals as having a value past, you know, not everybody, obviously. Those of us on the phone right now believe they all have a value, but the general public, you know, there's a large percentage of them that they are just a commodity or they're for right now, and people assume that there's a rescue group for, you know, to take my animal as opposed to seeing it through and really, like, cherishing that as a living, breathing, you know, being that deserves the respect that any of us deserve.
Well, there's
I always
a fine
find
line.
That
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I always find that people miss, kind of going along with that whole education thing, is they don't understand about definitions. They don't understand what it means to be domestic. They don't understand what it means to be wild or tame. And by not understanding any of those definitions, they have all these misconceptions about what it really means to be a particular, I guess, classification of animal. And that, I think, lends itself to a lot of the problems that she was describing.
Yeah, and
I
a lot of it comes
very,
down
very
to,
much agree with that. Yep.
You know, animals nowadays have become just like a monetary commodity, to where people care more about, like, the general public, I should say, cares more about when the iPhone 6 is coming out as opposed to the animal that they have in their home. And it doesn't even have to be anything of a canine or feline. You buy your kid a hamster, and then he grows out of it, and then that hamster is neglected. You know, just something as small as that. Like, one of my best pets, and this has nothing to do with anything of breeds that we've talked about or anything like that. One of my favorite pets that I had when I was growing up was a rat, which is bred for food. It was a feeder rat that I bought from a pet store. And that was one of the sweetest animals her name was Squirt, and I was like 4 or 5 or 6 somewhere in there, but I could take Squirt and I could go out into the backyard and just take a feeder rat and put her down, and I would run to like a far area of it. And she was kind of looking around, doing her thing, doing her little rat thing. And I would call her, and she would, like, bolt straight to me and jump in my lap and crawl up on my shoulder. Like, there was such a bond, even with something so what people would call insignificant as a rat. I don't recommend trying that with city rats, especially the Chicago ones, because they are, they'll kick any cat's butt. But
that's where you get into the domestic versus wild definition.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a feeder rat. That was food for a snake. That was food for a lizard. Mm-hmm. I mean, that wasn't a creature that was intended to be a pet. And I mean, she only lived till she was about 3. But
that's pretty good.
I will remember that until the day that I pass away. You know, it was an awesome pet for $5.99.
Yeah. I had a friend back in Iowa who did rat rescues. And, I mean, we're kind of getting off topic on canines, but they actually are very intelligent, and people look at them as vermin, but they actually are very good for being able to express different emotions, and they can and do bond with people, and most people see them as invaluable and don't even regard the fact that they have feelings. But I learned to respect the rats from my friend, because she would rescue them and then help to get them through the rest of their lives. They're pretty incredible.
Yeah, and that was all, even though we're talking about rats and not canines or felines or anything like that, you wouldn't have known that without the proper education about them.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a friend that did that, and you got it, and that's where it led you to current. I mean, that's awesome, and that's exactly what I like. For the people who normally listen to our show that don't know about either of your organizations, hopefully it'll give them the sense to say, oh yeah, you know what, I want to look into this and kind of get a little bit more about it. And I know you guys at Wolf Sanctuary, you have a huge following. I know any, and not just yours, Dopey, sorry, but like any of the adoption agencies always, well, most of them, I should say, have a very stand-up reputation, and it's not only about just finding new homes, it's about educating people who currently just have an animal. They say, I can't handle this. And either take it in, or you can, you know, go through the whole process of, all right, this is what you're doing wrong. And before I take this animal, do you want to keep it and I can educate you, or, yeah, I'll just take it off your hands?
And I would say to that I think a lot of people have a misconception in general about rescue. Once you work in rescue or you work in a sanctuary, you get to the understanding that you cannot save them all, no matter how many volunteers you have, no matter how big of a building. And people, the general public, think, oh, a rescue will take this. Oh, a rescue will take it. It'll be saved. Well, the unfortunate thing is there's just not enough rescue people to do that. There's not enough resources to do that until we start educating the public and people start thinking before they breed, or they have the quote-unquote accidental litter. They instead go to spay-neuter. And until, you know, we get, you know, the population to kind of understand that, you know, there's more to this. I mean, my rescue in Richmond, Virginia gets about 200 emails a day, and I can tell you that on an average day, between 60 and 80% of those are people wanting to surrender an animal, or they are a jurisdictional shelter begging us to take animals from all over the country. I had one today where a girl is asking me to take a dog from Puerto Rico. You know, she found it on the streets, and she has to come back to Florida, and Miami has breed-specific legislation, so she cannot bring it back with her. She's rehabbed this animal and is desperate to find a rescue organization in the United States willing to take this dog. I mean, you know, the unfortunate thing is I can't take all of them, so we have to educate the public. The Wolf Sanctuary can't take all of them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to get to the root of the problem. There needs to be people stop. They need to stop breeding these dogs for commodities and, you know, and stop putting them in bad situations, and we need to get a handle on things. And I mean, lucky for us in Richmond, Virginia, we now have 6 low-cost spay-neuter clinics. But I can tell you right now, every single one of them is booked out for months, and there's still more behind it, you know. And, I mean, that tells you a lot. This isn't a huge, huge city here. This is a city of, you know, what, 100,000 people, and you add the, you know, the greater Richmond area in together. I mean, you know, 6 spay-neuter clinics running between 4 and 6 days a week. That's a lot. You know, most of them are doing 30 spays and neuters on average a day, and we still can't keep up. And there's still litters coming in. So it's, you know, we've got to get a grasp on things, and people have got to start taking responsibility.
Yeah, and speaking of that, as far as location, like Shelley or Michelle, I don't know who would have a better knowledge. Well, both of you probably would, but what's the actual sanctuary size of, like, acreage or whatever of total property that you guys have there?
Total property, I believe, is 160 acres, roughly, that we own currently on the property. Due to some irrational fears and kind of prejudices against wolves, we unfortunately are restricted to only being able to use 5 of those 160 acres for the sanctuary itself, for the animals housed there. You know, we would love to be able to use more of our land for the animals, and this is, it gets back to education. People, if people understood what a wolf was, you know, we hopefully wouldn't be in this issue to begin with, but, you know, we would be able to expand our mission and do more. So education is a huge, huge component of everything at the sanctuary and in the animal community in general. There's a lack of people knowledgeable about animals, so I think that's pretty much every rescue group and sanctuary's ultimate mission and goal is to provide that education, provide that knowledge. So it's definitely a challenge that you have to go up against, and I know there are issues all over, and, you know, wolf is not unique. There have been sanctuary and rescue groups that have been run out of areas due to, you know, they've actually been physically shut down or had to move or are dealing with issues and problems because the people around them just don't understand what they're trying to do for the animals and for the greater human community. So it's definitely not a unique wolf problem. It's one that, unfortunately, a lot of organizations across the country face.
Yeah. Oh. Michelle,
I have to ask, and I've been quiet for very long. Why are you only allowed to use 5 acres out of 160? What is the...
There are a number of complaints ranging from, I'm afraid the wolves are going to get out and eat my grandchildren, to they make too much noise, so we don't want them here. I mean, you name it, we've heard it. and essentially it, and I'm not sure exactly why, but the county came to us and said, we have to put a restriction. When the restriction was placed on our facility, we had a roughly 45 animals that we had rescued. And due to some pressure, I'm not sure exactly where it came from, the county came into us and said, you can't do this. You have to play by our rules, which you know, we've just created for you. And here you go, play by these rules. And originally we had 45 animals, and they told us that we were only allowed 30 and pick 15 to kill. Is what they told us when they came in, and we said, no, we're not going to do that. So it was a long negotiation process with the county to get them to allow us to get down to our current limit of 30 animals through natural attrition of the animals there. And like I said, I'm not sure exactly what it was the catalyst that brought the county into adding additional regulations onto Wolf. I'm not sure what that catalyst was to make that, but I know that there's been a lot of opposition toward the sanctuary. We've tried to expand our use of property numerous times, and we've had a lot of the neighboring community come out and speak against us, and like I said, ranging complaints from I can't sleep at night because it's noisy to the wolves are chasing all the birds away, so I can't birdwatch anymore. So I know that there's a lot of problems there, but the actual catalyst which brought the county that got the county involved to begin with, I do not know what that was. I was not around when that happened.
Okay.
I have to chime in real quick and say I find that extremely interesting, because if you were a commercial dog breeder, you'd be allowed to have probably hundreds of animals in mm-hmm. sheds breeding. And I think it's just unbelievable that this day and age that we in this country allow these large operation commercial dog breeders, but you can't have a sanctuary when you own 150 plus acres.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask as far as the ring dogs. And that, so 5 acres, 29 animals currently, or 30 animals mm-hmm. currently, or maximum. For ring dogs, what's your space, and how many animals do you currently have?
Ring Dog Rescue does currently, we do not have a facility. We started in 2004 as a foster-based rescue with just myself and Tanya, and we brought in then our first foster home very quickly. And we, on average, have around 40 to 60 dogs in our program at a time. There are a few foster homes that do have more than one foster, but for the most part, everybody has one foster dog at a time, except for a select few homes. Everybody, they live in the house with all of the other animals as family, and so they learn to be house dogs. They're all crate trained, housebroken, vaccinated, spayed, neutered, microchipped, all these other great things. We do work with a local training facility that does do a 6-week training program, one dog at a time. So some of the dogs are a little bit harder to handle or to break their shell, per se, when we get them in, go into the 6-week training program. And then we work with 3 boarding facilities for emergency cases.
Matt?
Okay. So, yeah.
Again, you were inside my head. You beat me to the question, and that's why we make such a great team. I'm just dumbfounded that, you know, the Wolf Rescue has so much acreage, mm-hmm. and, you know, Ring Dog Rescue has such a small area. And our government, well, even though we're half a world apart, well, not half a world, but half a country apart, it still leaves me dumbfounded that we have this same issue. It's size, it's quantity, it's... I'm still dumbfounded on the wolf rescue having 150 plus acres, and you're limited to 5 acres is all you can play in.
And you know, it's not. There's a lot of prejudice that it's against us because also it's wolves, and you know, all that. It's ingrained in people so much that, you know, wolves are supposed to be these vicious animals that are going to tear out of their enclosures and rampage through the village and rip the kids out of their beds and eat them alive. And, you know, we're indoctrinated to this when we're kids with fairy tales, the Big Bad Wolves, and Little Red Riding Hood, and werewolves, and Twilight, and everything you see villainizes wolves, and wolves, given their own choice, they want to be as far away from the human race as they possibly can. And, you know, and ranchers villainize them, saying they come in and indiscriminately kill their livestock. They don't do that. Wolves in the wild are only about 8 to 10% successful in their kills, and they're not going to expend energy just for recreational killing. They're going to be using their energies for survival. And right now, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife is trying to delist the gray wolf in Northern America so we can have open season on the wolves again, even though they were put on the endangered species list. And you look at places like Wisconsin and Montana and Wyoming and the means that they're using right now to barbarically kill these animals with really cruel and inhumane methods is horrid. And it's just... it's unfathomable to think that we're going to just turn hunters loose to go out and put us back on the brink of extinction again. And, I mean, there's things you can look up. I'm getting very passionate about this. There are hunters who have come up with these cruel ways of luring the wolves out of Yellowstone. And once they're out of Yellowstone's boundaries, it's fair game that they can do whatever means they want to kill them. And it's just not right. Wolves are, our problem is we're facing is that we're working with wolves and people's hatred of them in addition to us trying to save them.
Well, that's where the education comes in, for sure. And
I don't think it's so much our hatred of them as it is the general populace's misunderstanding of them. Just like it's the misunderstanding of the pit bull or the bully breed itself.
Absolutely. It's the same argument in a lot of ways, you know. While one is domestic and one is wildlife, it is very much the same argument that, you know, they want to ban them in places when we're saying, you know, you don't have to ban them if people become more responsible, you know.
Hey, I'd hate to cut everybody off, but live right now, Shelly, Michelle, if you can throw out any plugs, and also, Opie, if you can throw out any plugs about the Green Dogs that's live on air. It'll still continue, but please, if you can.
Well, I'd like people to visit our website, www.wolfsanctuary.net, and you can learn a lot about our sanctuary and why we exist. And also, just keep in mind that we're trying to move the sanctuary, so if you guys have any good options for us, please let us know.
And please visit www.ringdogrescue.org. We are a pit bull type dog rescue in Richmond, Virginia. And we hope that everybody will start practicing to be more responsible guardians of all animals.
And I just like to comment kind of for both organizations, if you really, really want to help in a broad way and you're not able to help in a particular organization with volunteering or monetarily, you can still help us spread the word, help us educate, help us teach people about about bully breeds and about wolves and about wolf dogs. And if you've learned anything here tonight that you didn't know, please share it with your friends, your family, your coworkers. Help us to make a difference in the lives of all the animals across the country, not just the ones we're lucky enough to get to know.
Absolutely. I second that.
I have to say, ladies, you are all class act.
Thank you.
Just
thank
the way
you.
That you did not only present your own cause, but you spoke up for the other cause. Absolutely class act.
Well, ultimately, we're all in it for the same reasons, and we're all trying to make the world a better place, and it doesn't matter what or how we're doing it. If we're all trying to do the same thing, it's always good to work together. We'll get further that way.
Absolutely. If more people started working together, I always say it doesn't matter where you adopt from, as long as you adopt responsibly, then we're
mm-hmm.
going to be a much better place. And as long as you really work together, we can get the message out much farther. And I've really enjoyed the conversation tonight.
Me too. Thank you for having us on tonight.
Yeah, and I will say, and this is wholeheartedly, it means so much to us that everybody took the time to sit and talk with us. And I agree. I hope that there was somebody listening that wasn't from either organization that follows you and supports you and knows exactly what you do. That's not the audience I wanted. The audience I wanted was the ones who have no clue about what you guys do. And hopefully it did touch somebody's heart enough to become more of an activist, even if it's not with either organization, just with a local organization. I mean, we have people who listen to the show from Australia, from Canada, from Europe. I mean, you know, we have a global audience, and if even one single person was touched by this whole show, and it changed their perspective and their life on what they want to do, and they want to become more of an activist about something with a local thing, I think that's phenomenal.
Well,
that's
I have to say, and you know, I'm pretty much a hard ass. Shelley, Michelle, Opie, y'all really touched me. Just the dedication, the love, the devotion that you have and what you do. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
You're
welcome.
I appreciate it. I'm, as you know, typically a little afraid of media. We make Tanya do it, but I really, really enjoyed this.
Yeah, well, we suck anyway. And, you know, there was only three listeners tonight, according to Blog Talk, which, by the way, when it tells us three, it might be 3,000 and it might be 300,000. We really don't know, and neither does Blog Talk. But I do want you to know this. You three ladies actually touched me tonight. And
nice.
I want to thank you for taking the time to join us. And if anybody that is listening thinks about adopting a wolf breed, wolf hybrid, pit mix, full bred pit, listen to what these ladies have to say. You have nothing but love that will come from what you adopt. You need to...
I mean, a lot of work.
Well, yeah. You need to A, hide your shoes, and B, be prepared to be loved unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
And And the biggest thing with that too, and Dennis, I completely agree with you, but the one thing is, if it's something that you think is going to be cool or whatever, do your research, educate yourself first, reach out and find the information that you need of what you're getting yourself into, because on the wolf aspect, it's a lot of work.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
So, and that's any hyperactive breed, and even, you know, when I tell people, like, adopt a Husky, adopt a Malamute, you have to change your whole life structure just for that
mm-hmm.
breed, which is one degree of separation, kind of. It's a chore. I've owned a Husky. I've owned a Malamute. They're not easy animals to deal with. They're stubborn. They're bullheaded,
mm-hmm.
just the same as any of the bully breeds are. They're not just bully breeds because they beat up on things. They're bully breeds because they beat up on you emotionally.
Oh, God.
And your belongings.
Uh-huh. And tear everything up.
Now,
you know,
I will say, I own three pit bulls. I own three females. There are no fights amongst the three, which, you know, they say, oh, you can never own two female pit bulls or blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I own three. Well, okay, no, I take that back. Three
they
own me
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
my wife and my house. But they don't chew up shit. They absolutely have nothing but adoration and love for anybody that comes into my house. I promise you this, and this is no BS. If you break into my house, my three pit bulls will show you the way to the treat bowl. They will show you the way to my best and most valuable stuff, as long as you take them into the treat bowl first. You have to worry about me more than them.
Absolutely.
They're absolutely so adorable. And, you know, the two wolves that I met tonight that Becky owns, the male stayed outside and just kind of looked through the, like, little, she had a cat door, like the little screen flappy thing. The female ran back and forth through it, and she was probably 140 pounds. But she would run in, she would check me out, she would give me a lick or two, and that's a wolf. And, absolutely gorgeous animal. But if you're thinking about getting either a pit bull or a wolf, make sure you know what you're getting into. Do your research, study the animal, and expect to have nothing but love come back to you.
Yep. Educate. You got to educate yourself before you do anything at all. Yep.
And on that note, I mean, especially on that topic, Shelly and Michelle, you know, it'll be just any information that you want to send to me. I mean, Shelly, I know you have my email, and
mm-hmm.
I'll hook up with you about it. I do a lot of stuff locally that will get the word out, and Dennis and I will spread the word about the organizations. And like I said, even if somebody doesn't resort to either yours or if there's a point in the right direction, any networking that I can do for you guys, consider it 100% done. And
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
you know, I one thing I want, when I've had people over the years when I've worked on things for the animals, and they say, like, don't you get frustrated doing this because of how many people listen to you? And I said, well, the way I look at it is, it's like throwing a pebble into a still water. You create this ripple effect, and it reaches out. And you touch one person, that person touches somebody else, and that person touches another person. And even though you only know that person that was immediate to you, you actually reach out farther than that. And that's what we need to do, is, you know, touch a few people, and then hopefully they touch a few more, and we get the word out and educate people about what we're very passionate about.
Absolutely. And I have to say that it doesn't matter if there's one listener or 1 million listeners, if one person gets a good message, it will, and it changes the way somebody thinks, it will be, it's a good message and a good time.
Yeah, and no matter what, at any point, and it doesn't matter when, if there's anything that's going on within either of the organizations, just let us know, and we'll for sure promote it on air on our regular, just normal Wednesday or Monday, Wednesday shows. We'll definitely do everything that we can with our outlets to help out in any possible way that we can.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yes, thanks.
And
well, thank you.
You're welcome back on anytime you want also. So,
okay.
I'm sitting around,
that'll be fun.
Sitting around, you're bored, you're like, hey, I got nothing going on. hey, you want to have us on the show? Sure.
Okay.
Awesome. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. It's been a good evening. I really enjoyed it. More than I thought I would. I kind of got over my fear a bit. I've been trained to not talk to the media. So, you know.
Yeah, we're not media. We're medium. Well, mediocre. Well, no, we suck.
Oh,
but we have a
now.
Good time.
There you go. As long as you're having a good time, that's all that counts. And as long as you believe in what you're doing, you're good to go.
Well,
yeah,
we believe in what we do it for. And it's people like you that we do it for. So thank you very much.
Thank you. You are very welcome, and thank you for having us on.
So, again, you're more than welcome. The pleasure was definitely all ours. It means a lot on both ends of the spectrum. Ha ha, full spectrum. But it
shameless plug.
Yeah, I know, right? definitely means a lot to us. So I won't keep you all anymore. I know, well, Shelley and Michelle, you guys are an hour behind me. And Dennis Coffey, you guys are an hour ahead. So, but I will let you all get back to your business, and it definitely, from the bottom of our hearts, it really does mean a lot.
Thanks for having us
on.
You guys, good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Have a good
night.
Bye. Good night.
Bye.
Opie, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And as a Richmond local, you have my number now.
Mm-hmm.
I promise you, anything that I can do to help the Ring Dog Rescue Organization, I promise you I will be right there. All you have to do is shoot me a text.
Thanks so much.
Very worthwhile.
Well, thank you so much. I hope you get to go snuggle up with your pups now.
Yeah, well, I actually can look over my right shoulder at all three of them who are sitting here staring at me like, Dad, you done?
There you go, right?
Yeah, they're absolute sweethearts. I couldn't ask for anything more, but thank you so much for joining us, Opie.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, Opie with Ring Dog Rescue out of Richmond, Virginia. Find them at ringdogrescue.org.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes, springdogrescue.org. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, dear. I certainly appreciated it.
Thank you. I appreciate it, too, very much. Thanks so much.
Have a great night.
Have a good night.
You too.
Bye, guys.
You too.
Night.
So,
bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye, hon. So,
bye.
Matt, what do you think? Another awesome episode of Full Spectrum Radio?
Yeah, definitely. Shelly, are you still out? Shelly was with us, but she just dropped.
They've all dropped. But I'll tell you what. So what we had tonight, ladies and gentlemen, was ringdogrescue.org. We had Opie joining us, who is the founder. We had the Wolf Sanctuary. We had Michelle and Shelly from Wolf Sanctuary out of Colorado. These ladies have nothing but the absolute best of intentions. And, you know what it taught me tonight, brother?
What's that?
It taught me that wolves are looked at as just mean animals, and all they want to do is eat you and blah, blah, blah. And you know what? I don't think that is even the most remote thing that these animals want to do. I think all they want is love.
Well, it's a complete stereotype to where, if you encounter a wolf in the wild, a wolf pack in the wild, 99% of the time they're going to run from you. It's the ones, if they're emaciated, they're starving, yeah, you're going to have to worry because you're probably going down and not going to live through it. And there was that movie The Gray with Liam Neeson that didn't help their case whatsoever. And it's just one of those things is people are not educated by how friendly, passionate, and the reason the wolf still has the title of majestic is because that's what they are. Because when you see one, you're most likely not going to see it for long because it's going to say that wolves are the king and queens of fight or flight. 90% of the time they'll choose flight. So that's where the majesty of them comes from. I mean, once you actually start doing a lot of research and interacting and spending time with them and all that, it's completely, completely different.
Yeah, I mean, when I met Becky tonight, and I met her two wolves, actually I only met the female. The male would not even come near me. The female would come near me just enough to lick my hand if I held it out, like to the furthest extremity. And, every dog that I've ever met wants to come up and lick me and love on me. I've never yet met a dog that doesn't want to just be my friend. But these wolves tonight knew that I was a stranger, and they didn't want to trust me right off the bat. But the moment that Becky walked to the far end of the room, both wolves were all over her like, oh, you are our savior, you're our god, our goddess. And we love you so much. And they just lavished her with affection and attention. And,
happens in a pack with the family.
Yeah, well, and that's what I was getting at is, when you see the thing that, the wolf pack will attack you and just shred you. That's bullshit. They run from humans. They stay in their own pack.
They're hungry. They'll always take the they'll always take an easy meal, like a chicken or a horse or a cow or, you know, something that's penned. But
way to go, Junior. You just made them sound like bloodthirsty killers.
No, no. What I'm saying is it's, they are predatory animals.
Well,
but
sure.
The human is not exactly on the menu. More or less, when they see a human, like they'll see a cow or a chicken or something, they'll know what it is. They'll know that that's food. But when they see a human and something walking way taller than what they are, that's, you know, and stuff that a food source that hasn't been ingrained into their blood from generation to generation to generation.
Matt, not helping them.
No, I am. What I'm saying is they're not going. Most of the time, they're just going to run from a human being. They're not going to attack it. They're not going to attack a person walking through a forest unless they're extremely, extremely hungry and you just happen to look appetizing at the moment.
I'm always looking good, baby. I'm always looking good enough to eat. Wait.
Oh.
That might not be a good thing.
But, yeah, on that note, I have to say thank you to Shelley, thank you to Michelle, and thank you to Opie for calling in. And we're not just blowing smoke. We definitely will, for sure, promote the organizations and help educate to get to where complete different ends of what you guys are doing, get the word out, and make sure that it's a, you know, and any help that we can give. I mean, that's why we had the show.
Oh, most definitely. Any help that we can give to the Wolf Sanctuary, any help that we can give to Ring Dog Rescue. You know, folks, when you think about the end of the day where you are able to sit down at the dinner table, there's organizations like, and there are people like this, you know, Michelle and Shelley and Opie, that they would rather feed the animals in their organization than themselves. It will only cost you 75 cents a day, blah, blah, blah. All that other happy bullshit that you see on TV, and that goes overseas, this goes right in your backyard. And it goes to people that are truly, truly committed to what they do. Reach out to them. Help they
help
need
us
it.
Help them.
The animals need it. Do what?
I said help us help them.
Yeah. Yeah, help me help them. Help Matt help them.
Not saying by giving us money and no. Just help
us. Don't give me
money.
Don't give me money.
No, it'll be gone. I'm kidding. But no, just help us spread the word. Even if you're sitting down with your family at the dinner table one night, just bring it up of, hey, why don't we look into this? And you don't have to give anything monetarily. You don't have to give anything financially. Just help.
You know what I would rather see, brother? Here's what I would rather see. I would rather see our listeners educate themselves on what it takes to get a wolf or wolf hybrid as a pet, because they are truly awesome. Or get a pit or pit mix, as a pet. Because, oh my God, dude, last night I had three of them snuggled up on my lap. Like, it was just TV time. And I had all three dogs snuggled up on my lap. If you look, folks, on CPR Dennis, you will find pictures of my three pit bulls just snuggled up on my lap and just relaxing. And, well, they're convinced that they're like teacup poodles or some little tiny, yappy, ankle-nipping little dog. But pit bulls, wolves, they're so misunderstood.
Well, I'm going to contradict you on one thing. Pit bull, yes, research that as a pet. Wolves, don't do it.
Well, research.
Oh, no, not even
go
that.
Somewhere, brother.
I understand that, but don't subject an animal that is born to run and hunt and have the freedom that's instilled in his genes.
But
unless
they've got to go somewhere.
I know that, but people's homes are not, trust me on this, people's homes are, or most people's homes, I should say, are not the place.
Exactly. I mean, most people's homes are not the right place for a pit bull breed either. But every animal has its place. The wolf's place is in the wild.
Yeah, that's the problem.
But if you can handle it, and you can give it a better life, what more can you say? I mean,
well, I definitely have to say on that we're gonna have to agree to disagree, because I don't agree with that at all.
Well, I'm not saying that everybody go out and get a wolf breed as a pet, because not everybody's made out for it, and not everybody's made out for a bully breed either. But here is my thought. Make a donation, support the Wolf Sanctuary in Colorado, support Ring Dog Rescue, and if you're made to be a teacup poodle kind of family, then stay with that. Right?
Yeah, that's definitely better.
Okay. I'm glad I made you happy for once tonight. By the way, folks, I pissed Matt off most of the night. But here's the thing. We both love each other. He's like a brother to me. And, yeah, y'all don't want to see the messages that he sent me. He was mean to me.
Probably not. That's,
ladies and gentlemen, I do want to thank you for joining us tonight. I think it's been a wonderful night. And I'm going to give you a nice mellow. Think about the fact that our wolves are part of history, and they are very fluent in the flyover states. Matt, I love you, brother, and I'll talk to you in a few days.
Yeah, love you too. Have a good night. I was going to play something different, but cool.
Couple guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles, kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendant. 30,000 feet above could be Oklahoma. Just a bunch of square cornfields and wheat farms, man, it all looks the same. Miles and miles of back roads and highways connecting little towns with funny names. Who'd want to live down there in the middle of nowhere? They've never drove through Indiana. This man who plowed that earth, planted that seed, busted his ass for you and me. You're caught a harvest moon in Kansas. They'd understand why God made those flyovers. That mile-long Santa Fe freight train engineer seen it all. Like that flatbed cowboy stacking U.S. steel on a three-day haul. Roads and rails under their feet. Yeah, that sounds like a first-class seat on the plains of Oklahoma. With a windshield sunset in your eyes, like a watercolor painted sky, you think. Slide.